While I was sitting, this story, this Zen story came back to me. It's with the layman Peng, who I've talked about before. He's he was a contemporary of some of the greatest Zen masters in ancient China. In the 9th century, I think, China. But he was not a Zen master technically himself, because he was a lay person. He was not ordained as a monk. And he had a wife and children. And the whole family practiced together and would travel from monastery to monastery and visiting teachers and some of the most famous stories from that time that had been passed down had to do with him and his family. And he became respected among the teachers and that he practiced with, and at times they would suggest to him that he join the monastery, and he didn't feel that was his way, and he continued on with his lay way. So he's remembered as being the layman Peng. In this story, he's sitting in his meditation hut, and his wife and his daughter are outside, and he calls out. Suddenly they hear him calling out from the hut, and he says, "It's so difficult, it's so difficult." And something like, "It's so difficult, even though I have polished the floor and put so many layers of varnish on it." And his wife calls back, "It's easy, it's easy. Just take off your shoes and sit down." And his daughter says, "Not difficult, not easy." And then add something, I don't remember exactly what it is, but something like, "The wind blows the grass," or "The stream flows by," or something. I don't know, some statement like that. And sometimes the story is just, depending on the translation, all it says is, "Layman Peng said, difficult, difficult. His wife said, easy, easy. His daughter said, not difficult, not easy." Now, this came to me because I'm not sure why exactly it came to me, but I had been thinking about how usually we talk about oneness and diversity. Right? So that there's one and many. And then sometimes we say, but they're not separate. Everything is one. We express it as three, right? And we even, use the example of the triangle. This is what, in the Big Mind thing recently, Gempel was pointing out again. I talk about the triangle sometimes myself. I give that example from Joyce in Ulysses, where there's the triangle. You can think of it as an egg, which has the yolk and the white, and then the whole. there are numerous threes, threesomes, trios, triads, triangles, trinities. In most spiritual traditions, this figure reappears, of three. Also, the figure of one appears. And so this came to me, and I was thinking, you know, really, one is three. But that doesn't make sense, right, when you say one is three. And so then the story of Lan and Pang comes back. Lan and Pang and his wife and daughter, where there's the many would be difficult. The one would be easy. And then the three would be not difficult, not easy. Forget your notions of what numbers mean. Okay? Because your concepts of what numbers mean will only limit you to those concepts. So we have to let go of the confines of the concept in order to follow. In order to taste, in order to experience this, not difficult, not easy. Because if we're thinking of it, in terms of numbers, then we will say not difficult, not easy, and it becomes something else. It becomes another something. Whereas it's not difficult, it's not easy. And when, as Lan and Pang says, difficult. Just being here in this moment is difficult. This is what he's saying. He's sitting there. It's difficult. This practice is difficult. This way is difficult. No matter what I've tried, no matter how I've polished it, no matter all of the effort I do, or not effort, I've made it smooth. So I don't put effort, and it's difficult. His wife says, it's easy. Just take off your shoes and sit down. That's all you have to do to be here. Just take off your shoes and sit down. Doesn't matter if the floor is polished. Doesn't matter if it's cold or hot. Just sit down in the middle of it. Easy. And then the daughter says, often in the stories, the daughter is the wisest of them all. She's kind of gone down in history as being the wise man of the family. So she says, not difficult, not easy. This is the transcendent position, we would call it. It's not transcendent in the sense that it's beyond. It's transcendent in the sense that it's transcending the usual positions that we have for things. It's not going beyond them. It's just not being limited by them. So in that sense, it's transcendent. So, she says, not difficult, not easy. Why is it not difficult, not easy?
Just what it is.
That's right, it's just what it is. Now, in the it's easy is implied there as well. Take off your shoes and sit down. In the difficult is implied there as well. I'm struggling. Struggling is just what it is. It's not difficult, it's not easy. The struggling is just struggling. Just take off your shoes and sit down is not easy, not difficult. It's just what it is. So in fact, all of the position, it's not that one of them is better than the other. Usually we have a preference. Usually we think that we prefer the it's easy, In fact, we're very attached to it's difficult, it's difficult. I don't see, I don't get it, I don't understand, I can't do it, this is uncomfortable, when will it end? Everyone else understands and I don't, or I've got it, the others don't. We're very attached to that, to all of those positionings, to all of those dualities. We think that we prefer the it's easy, it's easy. Okay, so then we prefer it's easy, it's easy. And if we're preferring it's easy, it's easy, we are back to difficult, difficult. Because when it's not easy, then it's difficult. If there's no difficult, there's no easy. And if there's no easy, there's no difficult. The dualities always work in pairs. Just like there are always threesomes. On the other hand, we can say, as I said, the threesome is really a one-some. It's a one, because they're not separate. You know, if you think of the triangle again, there is no triangle unless there's three. If there are only two opposing poles, then we have trouble. Then we have problems. We're missing part of the experience of being. The other day, at the Big Mind Workshop, Kempo Roshi used the example of a bird with wings. And this is an example that I've heard also from the Dalai Lama and from other teachers, with a little bit difference. Or maybe it's me who adds this little difference, I can't remember. If we think of the wings of the bird as being one wing being, it's difficult. The dualities, the many, right? And we think of the other wing as being easy, one. If one of those is not there, there is no flight. The bird cannot fly if you don't have two wings. If one is stronger than the other, then there'll be a problem. When the wings function, when they're both doing their functions and functioning equally, we have, say, I suppose Genpo probably said the transcendent position, I don't remember. But I would say we have the bird flying. What is the third position? It's flight. It's free functioning. It's the bird freely being. In fact, it's not three. The not easy, the not difficult, is not a third position. I present it as three, but it's not. No. You know, we could say we have day, daylight. We have darkness, night. And we have the totality, which is, we call it a day. It so happens that the day part of it also is the same. In Portuguese, is it the same? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dia? Mm-hmm. In French, it's the same. Except in French, you can make that, you can say journée, which also kind of distinguishes it between jour, nuit, and toute la journée. Okay. So, you know, and I'm sure that if there are plenty of examples of that. Can anyone think of another one? Of day and night and birds and, you know, plenty.
Form is emptiness.
Yes, well then we go back to the traditional Zen jargon, form and emptiness, which are the two. And so, yes, of course, one aspect of the bird is form. It's what we see, the wings and the feathers and the bones and the eyes and the beak and the color and the blood and the movement. Another aspect of a bird is we can't see it, except as it is expressed in the form. You know, I read something recently about how in Chinese terminology, there's a Chinese saying that says something like, a poem is a painting that is invisible. And a painting is a poem that's visible. That would be similar to form and emptiness in that sense. But in a, you know, not in a conceptual way, not using conceptual terms, form and emptiness, what other, you know, like day and night, or, the light side and the dark side of the moon is an example that I often give. There is one whole, but it's the moon. And we see the light side, and we see the dark side because it's the part that's not light. We would not be able to see the dark side if there wasn't the light side, and we wouldn't be able to see the light side if there wasn't the dark side. And yet, they are one. There's the third aspect, which is the oneness of it.
I think that we all can relate to a very typical duality in all our lives, which is the suffering as being the difficult, whatever that suffering may be, that anxiety, desire, want, need and rest, the non-difficult as the absence of that suffering. And then you can call it at the apex whatever you want, but perhaps we call it life, which is the two of them. Does he have a preference for
one or the other?
For not suffering? We think we have. In fact, we have a strong preference about suffering because we want to keep the story.
Because it makes us feel alive. If we don't have the suffering, then what are we?
Also relative, I mean, it's the absolute.
Same. Another conceptual terminology that we use. The relative just being, it's difficult. We're suffering, you know. All of this stuff. I feel old. I'm sick. I don't have enough money. I don't look good. I look great. I can't figure this out. I miss the train. Whatever. You know, all those things would be the relative. And then the absolute would be, there is no time.
That's
the train. There's no time. There's no one to get on the train. There's no one to miss the train. There's nowhere to go. And yes, indeed, same thing. We have the same preferences for one or the other. And by remaining confined, I would say, by those preferences, we miss the whole, the totality. And we don't experience then really what is. There was another example that was coming up while I don't remember. I remember what it was. Someone sent me a quote from Emerson. Something like, we think that peace is found outside of the storm. When in fact, we think that serenity is found outside of the storm. You know this quote? No? When in fact, serenity is peace in the storm. There is no peace elsewhere. It's not that we have to go outside the storm to find peace. It's in the middle of it, the storm being this. Someone sent me a postcard saying, it was actually Peter Matheson, who's a member of our lineage and who's also a writer. And he's quite old, and he's very involved in the American Indians and things, and so he sent me this postcard with a picture of an Indian on it and said something, and then at the end he said, "It would be nice to see each other once again before the smoke clears." Meaning that this world in which we live is the smoke, and when we die, the smoke clears. When we're gone, quote, gone, smoke clears. But as long as we're alive, it's smoky here. This is where the smoke is. And I really like that way of formulating it. There's nothing wrong with the smoke. That's what this life is about. We think, oh, I have to see clearly, I have to get out of this fog. This is a misunderstanding, because it is possible to see clearly in the fog. But if the fog were to, if the smoke were to be cleared, there wouldn't be this anymore. There wouldn't be the relative world. There wouldn't be the manyness. In fact, the clearing of the smoke involves eliminating the manyness. Smoke is raised by the manyness, by the diversity, by the interaction, by the abundance. And peace is to be found in the middle of that, in the middle of the storm, not somewhere else. And so, it's difficult, true. It's difficult. It's easy, true. Not difficult, not easy, true. Now, often when we think of that was what Tunis was speaking, I thought of another separation that we make. The big one is, yes, suffering and not suffering. However we make this separation, me and you, this is a big one. we make the separation of practice and life, ordinary life. Someone from, not one of my students, someone else who's making a rakusu, was speaking with him yesterday, and he was saying, oh yeah, you know, what do you think, his children and a wife, and he feels torn often about, you know, not being able to practice so much, and what he thinks of as practice, you know, coming to sit, and that, you know, what did I think about that? Was, you know, was this still a good thing for him to do with to Jukai, and how could he do it? And you know, he was seeing me as an example, and then asking me what I thought. Because I have children, and I, you know, I just, I said I can only tell you about my experience, which is that the more I make the separation between life and practice, the more difficulty I have. My practice becomes very difficult, and my everyday life becomes very difficult. But when I don't make that separation to such an extent, it becomes much easier. The practice becomes much easier, and my life becomes much easier. And actually what happens is that there is no difference. It becomes easier because I'm making less of a difference. My life is my practice. Everything I do is my practice. And my practice is my life. I said to him, you know, the two previous days, I was at my office doing something that apparently had nothing to do with this, quote, practice, and yet I was practicing every moment. And this is not something revolutionary, but what I'm saying. This is what all of the teachers throughout this lineage that goes back, you know, centuries and centuries, they've all said that. Layman Pang is a perfect example. He's a really good example for us today in the West. He didn't do anything special. He didn't have to leave his home. He didn't have to leave his family. He didn't have to change his life circumstances. He didn't have to push aside anything in order to put something else in the center of his life. As soon as he recognized that his life was his practice, then everything became practice. And whatever distracted him from that was practice too. Can we say that? Can we be inspired by that, maybe? I don't know. You know, how would you define your practice? How would you, if someone said to you, what is your practice? Would anyone like to say what they would say if someone asked them?
Amazed me where she was. Everything is working on.
No. Everything is workable. And he also said when someone, an interviewer, asked him, what is the most important point? And he said, everything is important. Wow. Yeah.
Appreciate your life.
Appreciate your life, another thing he said. And that's a very deep statement. That means all of it. Not just and it doesn't mean liking it. Often we think of appreciating as then we like it. It's not liking it. It's seeing what it is. Seeing it for what it is.
And living it.
Hmm?
And living.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I say seeing it as it is, it means being it. Yeah, living it. Whatever it is. And often we judge it instead of appreciating it.
Study it, evaluate it.
Right.
Judge, interpret, evaluate, analyze, fantasize instead of living.
Yeah. Now we can still do all of those things. Judge, analyze, interpret, etc. And say, appreciate that that's what we're doing. It doesn't mean we like it, but we can acknowledge that that's what we're doing. And appreciate that. Appreciate in the sense of it's taste it, you know, feel it, experience it, experience what that means to judge. And immediately, it's different than if we don't. If we are fixed on the judgment, it's different than opening to it and allowing it to have its flavor. Then there's really no judgment anymore. The judgment is just judgment. It's not the centerpiece, the pièce de résistance. How much time is left?
It's 9.
Okay. So, yeah, there's so it's such a vast. Let's say it's at once it's immense and it's just this. It's both. Again, in Chinese art and calligraphy and painting, often the paintings are just two pieces of bamboo, or just a boat in the middle of a lake. Pointing to the immensity in the minimal, let's say, using the one to reflect the immensity, to reflect the whole, the part reflecting the whole. So, but that's not possible if the whole is not lived as being, if the part is not lived as being a whole.
Right? Yeah, but it's quite difficult because if I try to say, how can I incorporate my practice in my life, as soon as I say that, I'm in the difficult part of your saying.
Why is it difficult?
Because I'm trying to do something. So as soon as I'm trying to do something, I'm stuck in one part of it.
That's right.
So if I ask you, how can I do that, you will say, well, it's difficult.
I might not say that. But it's true that as soon as we start struggling to put the effort and do something, make something happen, we go in the opposite direction. We go away from what we want. But if we don't, we go away from it too. So, well, what do we do? This is what, you know, this is the famous middle way that we talk about. And often, this Freddie, I think you've asked this same question many times. This, you know, it comes up regularly. But it's not, this is just your question, it's everybody's question. It's the same issue we all have. When we say right effort in English. What is the right amount? What is the right amount of effort? Another Zen master said, think not, just think not thinking. Well, if I'm thinking, how can I think not thinking? You know, I can think not thinking, but then it's just another thought, right? Or we say, just identify with your awareness. Just instead of identifying with me or identifying with the object, just identify with the awareness. Okay, but then I'm stuck in this position of trying to identify with something again. This is the practice. But that applies in everything you do at every moment. It doesn't just apply when you're sitting on your cushion or just when you're, you know, reading a book or about Zen or, you know, something that you think of as being a practice. That same problem, that same dilemma exists at every moment in everything you're doing. And therefore, every situation is perfect material for it. Every situation is a possible moment of practice.
I would say that practice for me recently, or I don't even know, is actually not much effort in with regard that it's just curiosity and passion for how it works, or how it is life. For me, it's all about allowing myself to be touched and moved by people and what's happening. And then I guess that being curious and passionate about how it moves and how it gets stuck and why not. And is far more richer outside the cushion. Even if I don't, if I love the cushion, but it's far more richer outside. And it happens mostly outside.
And it's richer because there's more material?
It's material, I guess so. Yeah. There is more opportunity for awe and wonder now. Doesn't mean that it's not going to change. It hasn't been always like that. There is more opportunity for wonder just because there is more stimuli. But it is an allowing.
Allowing
life. An allowing feeling. Allowing oneself to feel. Which sometimes is extremely difficult, if not most of the time. But just take it with good humor.
Yeah, and even sometimes allowing ourselves to feel, of course we think, oh yes, we don't want to allow ourselves to feel bad things, but even to feel good things is what we think of as good things, and bad things are, they're both difficult sometimes. You know, if we open unconditionally, that's kind of frightening. If we enter the space of not knowing, we don't know what we will find. It's frightening. And yet, do we have a choice? We of course have a choice. If you're here, you've decided or you've become aware that there's something else you're interested in. You're not interested in limiting yourself to what we think of as ordinary perception of the world. Not ordinary in the sense that this, what we're talking about here, is extraordinary. It's just that what generally we think of as being life, now there's something else that's been introduced if you're sitting here. And you may not pursue it any further, but if you're sitting here, it means that there's something else that's been introduced.